Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is the show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. You can also listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or the Common Sense Spirituality. We encourage and welcome your questions. So what is spirituality? It's simply understanding our true nature and using that knowledge to help us deal with life's day-to-day problems. Now, we all hear the phrase, we need to be enlightened, and people telling us we must be awakened. But what does that mean? We're being told we need to change, but change to what? Today's show is titled Awakening, and we're going to discuss what that really means and why it's important. Our guest today is T.J. Woodward, author of Conscious Being. T.J. is an awakening coach, inspirational speaker, and addiction counselor. He is the founder of and minister of the Awakened Living Spiritual Community in San Francisco and host of the Awakened Living Radio and Awakened Living TV. T.J. Woodward. Welcome to the show, T.J.
Thank you so much, Dave. So delighted to be here. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
As am I. Now, I read your book, Conscious Being. Why don't you tell the listeners what you mean by conscious being? What is it? You know, it's an unusual two words to be put together.
Yeah, thank you. You know, the subtitle to my book is Awakening to Your True Nature, and that really, to me, is the essence of what it means to be a conscious being. The title originally came from an Eckhart Tolle quote, where he simply says, conscious being leads to conscious doing. And I think in our culture, we are so focused on the doing and not a lot of energy or time focused on our beingness and what it means to wake up to our true nature, or what I call the great remembering. You know, a lot of times when we talk about spirituality and enlightenment and awakening, it seems like a very complex process. And for me, awakening really is a moment by moment choice of remembering and returning to our true nature. So that really is what I mean by a conscious being, is being aware of that true nature and finding a way to return to that and living from that place of beingness rather than spending so much time focused on the doing.
Okay, so what is our true nature?
Our true nature, you know, it's interesting because words are so limited, right? But what I know in my own journey and in the clients I work with and the people that I've talked with, there is an innate sense of this changeless eternal self that we came into this world absolutely knowing. You know, children, if we look at very small children, there's an absolute presence and awe, a wonder, a curiosity about life. And then we get taught all of these things. The term I like to use, which I got from Don Miguel Ruiz in his book, The Four Agreements, is the domestication of the human. We get taught all kinds of things about fear and separation and us and them and good and bad. And we lose that innate sense of who and what we are, that connection or that oneness with that true nature. So, you know, the process of spiritual awakening to me, it really is unlearning and dismantling all that so we can return to that place of presence, that place of wonder and awe and curiosity.
So you see our eternal nature, our true nature, as an eternal spiritual being. And this is kind of I call it a business trip that we're on out of the spiritual world. Would you say you saw it that way?
Absolutely. Well said.
Okay. Now you mentioned separateness, and in your book you talked about the illusion of separateness. You know, can you explain what you mean by that? Separate from what?
Well, we at the level of spirit are all one. And you know, what we're recognizing now is that science is beginning to recognize this in ways that mystics have been teaching about it for thousands of years. that we really have this illusion that we're all separate selves walking around. And when we view ourselves as a separate self, we have all sorts of strategies and ideas about how we need to compete and protect and remain safe in the world, when we absolutely know that place within us that is one with each other and every other living being, there's a sense of peace that comes in a natural way where we're not striving or clinging or participating, you know, kind of in the world drama. And we're looking right now, such a great time to be talking about this. There's a lot going on right now in the world that seems to be supporting separation and us and them. And this is an opportunity for us to really connect deeply with that spiritual self that we are.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. It's you know, we're brought up in a society where we do an awful lot of competing, and you know, when you're competing with somebody, then you want to win, you want to beat them, you want to, you know, dominate them. You know, of course, we see it in the Olympics, and we love it. But if we keep it as a sport, as a hey, this is great, let's work hard to compete, and as soon as the competition's over, let's put our hands around each other, hug each other, and move on, which you see every once in a while on the sports. But you don't see it, I say on the Olympics, but you don't see it enough. And it's because I think you're absolutely right. We see ourselves as individuals trying to survive in this clearly difficult world. And clearly, it's not the way it appears. It is an illusion that we live in.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about, or just being with, how we get taught fear. You know, love is what we're born with. Fear is what we're taught. I believe that's how Marianne Williamson said it. And that really, in a very simplistic way, allows me to recognize that there is this part of me that is beyond that, right? That is not about fear and separation. And we do get taught this, and you know, of course, by well-meaning people teaching us the, quote, way of the world for survival. What happens, though, we do have this fragmentation. We have this sense of brokenness because we have this innate connection, this innate sense that we are one. And then this other idea, this ego self that gets created really is quite an illusion. And what we're doing is we're calling the visible reality, and yet there's an invisible realm of being that is actually the truth of who and what we are, our true nature. And when we actually make friends with that and make a connection with that, all this other stuff in the outer realm that we've been calling reality, actually we recognize is quite illusory and quite temporary. And we can allow that, you know, that to pass by us like clouds floating by, rather than being caught up in being, you know, being bounced around by life, if you will.
Yeah, it's awful easy to do. You talk about a shadow self. And you know, talk a little bit about that. What is our shadow self, and you know, and how does that come into play?
Well, the shadow self simply is those parts of ourselves that we bury deep within our subconscious. It was Carl Jung that really began this conversation about the shadow, about those darker aspects, if you will, of our existence that we're afraid to look at. And what happens when we bury those parts of ourselves? We begin to project it out onto all other people. So we create an enemy externally when really it's something happening deep within us. So, you know, for example, if you look at the political race, you know, the presidential race right now, it's easy to become really polarized and to recognize, you know, there's one person's the enemy, one's the hero. And when we're living in that paradigm, that type of existence, we can be projecting all sorts of things that come out of parts of ourselves that we've buried. Addiction lives in the shadow. All forms of behavior that maybe we don't want other people to see get buried deeply in that subconscious. And without addressing that and bringing that into conscious awareness, then it keeps running our life. You know, I think it's Carl Jung that says it very simply, when it's unconscious, it's running the show or dictating our life, and we call it fate. It's only when we bring it into conscious awareness that we recognize we have a choice.
Yeah, that's good. Can we ever get lost in that? Can we get ourselves so embedded in or bury our shadow self so deeply that we kind of lose control of ourselves?
Absolutely. I would say that's what we call the human experience, most of us. You know, we're so deeply entrenched in the beliefs and ideas that our ego wants to tell us, you know, and I know I'm framing it in a way that it's an entity, but it certainly feels like one, right? It's this collection of stories and beliefs that we have about ourselves and the world, and we're then, you know, imprinting that on the entire world. That's the lens through which we're looking. You know, another way to say that is if I have decided that the world is a hostile and brutal place, I can find plenty of evidence to support that. If I decide the world is a kind and loving place, there's evidence to support that as well. So what happens is we recognize that we're actually creating what we call reality based on our level of conscious awareness. And the way the shadow plays into that is, if I'm unwilling to look at those darker aspects of myself, I'm going to see them out in the world and project them and create the enemy externally, rather than recognizing that the work here for all of us is to do the deeper work of clearing so that we can return to this true nature and live in a life that is really free from our ego, free from being bounced around by the externals of our lives.
Yeah. Let's talk about awakening. How do you know if you're awakened? You had some interesting concepts in the book, I thought. Let's talk about those.
Well, thank you for that, Dave. You know, people have often said to me, you know, be weary of someone that says they're awake. You know, so like, what does that mean? For me, I recognize what I want to say about it is simply this. We think of awakening or enlightenment as a process. There are plenty of spiritual practices that teach us that one day maybe I will be awake, right? And if I learn this particular meditation practice, or if I use this discipline for many years, then one day maybe I too can be awake like the great masters. I offer a different framework, and it's simply the question, what if we already are all awake? And it's more a matter of us recognizing that awakened state. So in that way, we can say we're all enlightened. We're all absolutely awake. We just may not know that, right? So awareness is actually the key here. It's awareness of that essential self that's always been awake, always been absolutely present and unharmed and unharmable. So it's really a journey of recognizing our true nature rather than trying to strive for something out there. And I think many of us, myself included, spend many, many years reaching for this enlightenment, reaching for this awakening, and yet it's something that's happened. It's already the truth of who and what we are, and this is about surrendering and letting go of our ego so that we can simply rest in this greater reality.
Now you mentioned seven different characteristics, and I thought those were good. One of the awakened state and one of the unawakened. And let's talk about the unawakened. You start out with, you know, when we have a tendency to blame others for things.
And you Yeah. In my book, I offer some signs of how we know we're living an unawakened life or we're having clear signs of awakened living. I can certainly go through what I have proposed as the unawakened. It's just a way for us to recognize, and again, this is about a moment-to-moment choice of what we're focusing on. So this is what I offer as some signs of unawakened living. Blaming others for our experiences, judging people or situations as right and wrong or good and bad, wanting to control others, feeling superior or inferior, experiencing resistance to what is, getting emotionally triggered by what others are saying or doing, and finally, needing to express opinions. All of those are, in my framework and my experience, clear signs of when we're not living an awakened life, or we've gotten sort of pulled back into the egoic way of being.
Okay, well, let's expand on a couple of these. Blaming others. Some, you know, you lend somebody your car, and they drive it into a wall. You'd have a tendency to blame the person for ruining your car. How do you deal with that from an awakened state?
Well, from an awakened state, we recognize that it's not really about blame. Sure, I mean, the person did wreck my car into a wall. Blame is a whole other thing, because blame then really says there's something wrong here. There's something wrong with the way that life is unfolding. And I love that example because it's a very real life example of something that may happen to us. As soon as we decide there's something wrong here, there's the blame, I think, is the key word, because we've decided that what they've done is inherently bad or wrong. When I open up and recognize that it happened, life happens, and there's really no one to blame here, then I am able to be free of this reactive mind. You know, once I've decided that there's something wrong here, within that, there's a seed of revenge, there's a seed of wanting to, quote, make it right. And that's where really where we see all the problems of the world. That's on a micro and a macro level. We see that's where why nations go to war, because we're doing it the right way and we're blaming you for our problems. We're blaming you for doing it the, quote, unquote, wrong way. And from that, the seed of revenge is planted. And then all of a sudden, there we are at war, individually or collectively.
Yeah, I think what we have a tendency not to do is look at our own responsibility. For example, on the case where we lent our car to somebody, I mean, it may have been just a pure freak accident, or we may have lent it to somebody, a friend of ours that we know has an addiction, and they were on drugs or on alcohol or whatever, or in a deep depression or whatever. And maybe we had certain responsibilities that went along with that too. And it would be easier if we could look at the bigger picture and say, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't have set that situation up, and it might not have happened.
Absolutely. And that really is the, if we're looking at opposites, the opposite of blame would be accountability, right? Let me be accountable for my part in this. And, you know, sometimes things just happen, right? What I have come to understand through my experience is that life isn't really what happens. It really is what we call it. Because once we've decided, isn't this terrible that this happened, then all of a sudden we're looking at it through the lens of terrible. People will often say, well, isn't that kind of Pollyanna? And I'm actually not saying that we pretend like it's not happening. You know, I think that there's a lot of spiritual teachings that would say, what accident? We're not going to focus on the accident. We can, however, say, I'm going to be accountable for my part in this. I'm going to recognize that it happened, and I'm willing to let this go and not concretize the idea of wrongness here and blame. And to me, that really is how we get seduced into the unawakened state, when we're really deciding and we're looking at the idea of right and wrong. And if we can move into a place of accountability and a commitment to presence and a commitment to neutrality and recognize what we're calling it, because that really is how we create our experiences.
Yeah. Some of the others, judging, I think we all kind of understand that we have a tendency to judge, and we live in a society that definitely encourages and teaches us to judge. Wanting to control, I think we can see that feeling superior and inferior. I agree with that. How about resisting what is? Why don't you expand on that one a little bit?
Yeah, I think one of the most profound spiritual principles is non-resistance. And another way to say that is acceptance, you know, allowing. I love the work of Byron Katie. She says nothing could be more futile than resisting what is, you know, that life is what's happening. And my resistance, or what I'm calling it, is what creates the difficulties in my life. So when we allow the circumstances of our life to happen, and we can recognize that there is a place within us that can witness that, rather than being caught up in what we call reality, as we've been talking about, when we believe that illusory nature of life to be the truth, of course, it's difficult, and we want to resist, because we're living in this idea of duality and this idea of right and wrong. So, of course, we want to push back and resist that. What we know is what we resist persists, of course. So when we can come to a place of witness consciousness, make friends with that bedrock of our being, and from there witness the rest of life, we can recognize that there's not as much to resist as we once believed. And in that place, we can come to a place of true freedom, which is a whole lot different than what we might have been taught freedom is in our culture.
Yeah, I think that resisting is a big part of our suffering. Let's go back to our car example. We can moan and groan, and we can be mad at the person who ruined our car, or which gives us an awful lot of angst and bad feelings. Or we can call up the insurance company and see if we can get any money for it. And if not, we go get another car or deal with it or see if our friend can help us out getting one. Suffering seems to be go hand in hand with resisting what is.
Absolutely. Well said, that, because that really is it, right? Pain is inevitable. Pain is part of life. It's part of this human experience. Suffering is something quite different, and I absolutely agree. Suffering really is resisting what's happening in the world, and most of us have been taught to focus on trying to control and manipulate the outer realm so that we can find happiness, whether that's finding the perfect partner, finding the perfect job, getting things to go a certain way in the outer realm. But what we know is that in that realm of existence, everything is temporary and changing, and there's really no freedom there. And so learning to practice non-resistance or acceptance of what is the way that we can attain absolute freedom. In the midst of anything that is happening, we can come from a place of absolute presence, absolute awe and curiosity, regardless of what's happening in the outer realm. And I agree, that is absolutely where suffering comes in. That certainly has been true in my life. When I'm resisting what's happening and I'm pushing back, that's the seat of suffering for sure.
Yeah. We're talking with TJ Woodward on awakening. TJ, talk about some of the characteristics of an awakened life. You had seven that you highlighted in your book. I like them all. Why don't you go through and discuss those?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go through these. So, clear signs of awakened living: experiencing oneness and connection, choosing acceptance and understanding, feeling comfortable in our skin, understanding a deep sense of belonging, expressing authenticity and vulnerability, being unattached to outcomes, and finally, knowing a deep sense of purpose.
Yeah, they're very good. Let's start out with the oneness again. And a connection. You know, there's one thing to feel a oneness and a connection with your family or close friends, and then I guess the next stage is to try to feel a connection with people in your groups that you might have, whether it's the school you graduated from or the church you go to or whatever. And then there's a bigger thing of trying to feel connected to humanity, and then even beyond that is nature itself. Why don't you talk a little bit about connection?
Yeah, you know, this is what really, Dave, to me, this is what we're all really seeking. We're all seeking love and connection, right? But most of us have been taught to believe that it's out there, that we need to connect with love out there and receive that from another person. When we are practicing or living in this principle of oneness, we begin to recognize that, as you said, that we're not only connected and one with those people in our immediate realm, but it's all of humanity. And what we can imagine and what I know is when we all practice this, that's how peace gets created on our planet, because it's the idea of a separate self that creates conflict. Again, we've been talking about that idea of a separate self of right and wrong. And when I recognize that we're all at the level of spirit one, this is a profound practice, because we can talk about oneness, we can talk about connection, really living it is a different thing. So let's take the political landscape, for example. Regardless of where you land on that, when we've decided that someone is the other, and usually what that means is someone's wrong in some way, we continue to concretize this ego that is existing, that's that suffering that we're talking about. We're resisting this. Oneness is beginning to become accountable, again, not blaming someone for our experiences, recognizing that all of that's happening within me, that change in consciousness has a profound impact on the world, and all the conflict that we see going on around us begins to dissipate, first in our own individual world, and then, of course, that's a ripple effect that affects consciousness all over the world. And then we actually begin to shift into a new way of being and seeing that doesn't continue to create this conflict that we're seeing.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, one other thing I'd like to talk about in this, in your list of seven here, is unattached to outcome. I think people struggle with that. So why don't you explain what that means and what do we have to do to be unattached to outcome?
Well, I think this is a really great conversation to have, because what I don't mean by that is we live in a life that has no goals. Now, that could be true for someone. You know, I have a friend who on his business card, it says, "My goal is to have less goals." And so that is one great perspective. For many of us, we do have things that we want to create in our outer realm. We have things we want to do. We have goals. We have intentions. The suffering comes from being attached to wanting them and needing them to manifest in a certain way. Because usually what most of us, the way we do it is, I have these goals, and in 6 months, I want them all to happen exactly the way I want them to. And, you know, that's just that limited thinking that happens of, like, I need this to happen in order to be happy. The key here, I think, Dave, for me is that to recognize that I have these intentions, I have these goals, I do have these things I want to do in my world, and I recognize if none of them happen, I am still absolutely awake, present, and happy. In other words, if I've decided that the outcome of any situation is what's going to bring me happiness, I've already set up what we might call karma, right? Because we have an idea that karma is an outside force. It really is repetitively thinking the same idea about the world and then having it repeat itself. So if I've decided that the only way I'm going to be happy is to have this certain thing happen, you know, by June of next year, whatever I've decided, I'm setting up suffering immediately. So being unattached to outcomes certainly means that we're still creating in the outer realm. We're in this world. I guess that's the quote from Jesus, be in this world, but not of it, right? Can I be absolutely okay if it doesn't happen the way that I have intended? So then we open up to a world of infinite potential instead of this finite idea of what it needs to happen in a particular way. So it really is about attachment. You know, of course, Buddhists clearly say suffering comes from being attached, right? That attachment to outcome, that attachment to things being a certain way is how we create suffering in our lives. So how do we create freedom? By being unattached and present with what is, and allowing that we are. I imagine it like, imagine that we're in a boat, right, going down a river. We can put a motorboat in and try to, like, really move that boat quickly the way we want, or we can allow the river to take us and we can gently steer it, being really curious about where life might want to take us rather than being so attached to a certain outcome. And I think, to me, that really is true freedom.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I relate it to work. I many years in the business world, and I, you know, and if you think of it, you know, if being unattached to outcome for me, one example would be, you know, you do your very best at work, you do a project, you do your very best, maybe you spend a couple years on it, and then when it's over, you don't worry about if you get a promotion or if you get a raise because of it. If it happens, hey, that's great, but you don't sit there and fret and say, I did a better job. I should have gotten that promotion. Being unattached to an outcome is just saying, I did the best I could under the circumstance. Now, what's my next task that I'm going to do the same thing?
Absolutely. Well said.
Now, you have in your book 7 spiritual truths, which I really liked, and I have them in front of me if you don't have them in front of you. And I would be happy to go through these, and I'd like you to talk about a couple of these things as we go.
Yeah, absolutely. And these came from my first spiritual teacher. Her name was Mary Helen Brownell, and she was the most enlightened being that I had ever met at that time, and honestly, probably since then. And what I mean by enlightened being was absolutely present and absolutely in the moment, and really just this amazing heart heart-centered being. And I, in my book, the second chapter I call Everyday Compassion, I dedicate to her. And I really sat with and in meditation of like, what were these things that she taught me through example that became what I call her seven spiritual truths. So thank you for recognizing that, that her teaching has had such a profound impact on my life.
Yeah, I could see why. The first one was, there is nothing wrong with you. That's a good one for you to expand on a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, I work in the field of addiction treatment. And one of the things that I'm actually writing my second book right now, focused on recovery and how we recover from addiction. And one of the things that I notice, and the reason I'm bringing this into the conversation, is people who are coming out of an addiction, one of the things that I've noticed is they're carrying around this deep sense of shame, right? There's something wrong here. There's something wrong with me. And so for most of us, in some way, we're carrying around what I call core false beliefs, right? We have decided with very limited information at a very early age, most of us, that either there's something wrong with me, I'm not lovable, I'm not worthy, I'm not capable. We have these core false beliefs and we're carrying these around, these unhealed emotional wounds within us. And most of us, the last thing we want to do is actually look there, right? So this principle of there's nothing wrong with you is a recognition, again, that there's this identity, this true nature that we have that is beyond those ideas that we're broken. Because, of course, if I'm walking around with the belief that I'm not lovable, what am I going to create in my life? More experiences to confirm that belief that I'm unlovable. We may on the outer realm we're going to strive so hard to find love and to receive love, but there's this unconscious core false belief that I'm unlovable. So I'm actually on an unconscious level recreating that and creating relationships in my life to confirm that. So that was profound for me when I first heard, what if there's nothing wrong with you? What if there's this part of me that's never been harmed?
Yeah, that's very good. Number two is, there is only one of us here, and we've talked a little bit about that. So I'm going to move on because of our time limitations here. But I want you to talk about this next one, which I really thought was interesting. The only prayer you need is thank you. There is no place for please in a prayer. Could you talk about that?
Absolutely. You know, in my book, Conscious Being, and I talk about levels of conscious awareness, which I don't know that we're going to have time to get into, but a recognition that there are these different levels of conscious awareness or levels of consciousness that we're operating from. When we're living in what I call the martyr level of consciousness, which is could also be called the victim level of consciousness, the idea of God is seen as a savior, right? And the idea that there's something outside of me that needs to bring me comfort or bring me peace. From that level of consciousness, we're always asking, you know, whatever we identify as a higher power or a God, please bring me, please give me. And in doing that, we are on an unconscious level affirming that there's something wrong here. So if I'm saying, oh, dear God, please bring me the perfect job so I can have money, I'm continuing to confirm that there's a lack. You know, it continues to concretize that lack consciousness. When we shift to thank you and we open up to more gratitude in our lives, whatever's happening in our life, and I can say that with absolute certainty, whatever is happening in our life, we can find gratitude within it. We can say, okay, I have, if I'm going through financial challenges, I ate today, I have a roof over my head. We'd start looking at the things we are grateful for rather than saying, please bring me this. So that simple shift to thank you really changes everything, because the more we tap into our natural sense of gratitude, the more it seems that life gives us to be grateful for. It's a profound spiritual practice that for me is fundamental in shifting the way we experience the world.
Yeah, I thought it was really good, and to me it says, you know, we've already been given everything we need. We don't have to ask for it. It's here. And if we need something else, they'll give it to us. What we have to do is put in our effort on our side and experience what is, enjoy it. But we don't need to ask somebody for something else. They've given us whatever that we need, and they will give us whatever else we need when we need it.
Absolutely.
It really helps your view of life, I think, especially when your problems arise, which they do every day.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And this really, as you said, this allows us to recognize that, you know, what if the world is infinite and we absolutely can, you know, the story that I'll say briefly is, you know, the way I like to frame it is, imagine that you go to the same coffee shop every morning and you get your small coffee and your bagel, and you've done that every day for many years. And you find these teachings that talk about, you know, the law of attraction. And so you say, oh, I want to learn how to manifest a croissant because I've been doing this bagel every day. So you use the affirmations and you figure, please bring me a croissant. Please bring me a croissant. Walk in the next day and lo and behold, there's the croissant. And you say, look what I've created. And then the person there says, oh, we've always had croissants. They were just on the shelf below the bagels. You didn't see them. And to me, that is such a simple way to say the world is infinite, but because of my own limitations, I'm not able to see how infinite the world is. And when I use gratitude and say thank you for what is, it actually expands my conscious awareness or my ability to perceive more and then open up to more of that in my life.
Yeah, that's very good. I'm gonna hit these next couple quickly because of time. And then the last one I want you to go into. The next one is God is within you, and that's very profound. But we've talked a little about it, and I don't want to go into it. Nothing outside of you needs to change. I think that's great. Everyone is perfect just as they are. I think that's really good. And the one I'd like you to expand on a little bit is we are not here to get good, only to get real.
Yes, and that is something that Mary Helen always talked about so much. And again, she was my teacher through her beautiful presence. You know, most of us in our culture have been taught that we need to do it perfectly, that we need to achieve, and that we need to become good, right? So many religions and spiritual teachings teach us about what is good and what is bad. If we can learn to follow these rules and be a good person, then maybe we can, get into heaven, honestly, is where a lot of people land.
And right. Heavy on the judgment on this.
Heavy on the judgment, right. Because, of course, if there's a good, then what is there automatically? There's a bad, right? So if I'm trying to strive for being good and I fall short of what I have decided that good is, of course, then I start to become viewing myself as bad, or of course others. So we go back into those unawakened living characteristics of good and bad and right and wrong. So becoming real, becoming authentic, and using vulnerability, which of course I put as a clear sign of awakened living, you know, expressing authenticity and vulnerability. Becoming real is something much different. When I really allow you to see me, things change in a miraculous way. We are seeing a profound shift in that right now on our planet. You know, the work of Brené Brown, where she's talking about shame and vulnerability. There's a shift that's happening where more and more of us are recognizing that this is about being our authentic self and bringing that into the room rather than trying to pretend that things aren't happening.
Yeah. Let's talk about you started these levels of consciousness, and I want to touch on these before we leave. You've got four levels of consciousness, and this is as we grow and as we mature. And the first one is the martyr state. You talked a little bit about that. Then there's the magical state, the metaphysical state, and the mystical state. Could you just quickly say what these states are, and it's more of a your viewpoint. It's a viewpoint that we have as we become awakened, as we mature, as we evolve spiritually.
Yes, thank you. And that really is it, right? That it's not really these levels that we attain. It's really a level of awareness that we have. So we expand our awareness of this greater reality, a greater truth of who we are. So I've offered this framework as a way for us to recognize, you know, how we are viewing the world and is it possible to expand. So the reason I say all of that is it's not that there's a judgment within these levels, like, you know, I'm better because I've moved to these other levels. It's that we're offering that we can expand to these greater levels of awareness and have more freedom and less suffering. So the first level I call martyr, which is really things happen to me. And then we move into what I call magical thinking, which is I make things happen. So again, level one, things happen to me. Level two, I make things happen. At this level, we begin to recognize that we do have the power, if you will. We're taking back our power to influence our world. This is where we use affirmations. We begin to recognize the power of thinking and that when we shift our thinking, we can change our life. Then we move into this third level that I call metaphysical, which is things happen through me. So again, one, things happen to me. Two, I make things happen. Three, I let or allow things to happen or things happen through me. This is where we begin to recognize that there is an energy in the world that we're wanting to align with. We're having more love in our lives. If we have an idea of God, we start talking about that God or beingness lives in our heart. And then finally, the fourth level of awareness is the mystical realm, and that's things happen as me. So from this place, when we arrive, and again, it's not necessarily a destination because many of us can move in and out of these levels, you know, throughout the day, but it feels like, or it seems like we're operating primarily at one of these levels. This mystical realm is the place where we've landed, where we recognize nothing in the outer realm needs to change in order for me to be free. This is about my oneness with source. We shift from God lives within me to I am that source as well as everyone else. This is where oneness exists. This is where we recognize that nothing needs to change in the outer realm for us to have freedom.
Yeah, that's very good. You know, we look out, we all do, we read the papers, we read the news, and we, when we look out there, we see a world that appears to be full of torment and turmoil. How do you see the world? Do you see the world as a place that's gotten out of control, or do you see everything that's happening as teaching experience for the people that are experiencing?
Well, I love that you're framing it that way because it is an opportunity for us, because I think the greatest way that we can work with this is to actually live in the question rather than have the answer. So the more I can say, you know, I don't really know, the more free I am. So what I'll say about this, though, is life is what we call it, right? The conflict that we see in the world all has been happening throughout history. What we recognize and what I've come to understand is there's this greater reality, this invisible realm that when we tap into and recognize, it's much more powerful than what we call the visible realm or what we have called reality. It's my experience that we're here to awaken to our true nature, and that everything that's happening in the outer realm, a couple of things might be happening, right? We've forgotten our true nature, and therefore we believe we have to compete and strive and have conflict. We see that in the world. Or we can say that, what if all of this is happening so that we have an opportunity to wake up? Because it's easy for us to, you know, be in a meditation circle and to feel love and oneness, that we walk out into the world and see things that are happening that look or appear to be conflictual. That's the real opportunity for us. Can I still be connected with and present with the love that I am in the midst of conflict? That maybe is more difficult for some of us. So life is happening for our awakening. What happens when we begin to view it that way? What happens when we say everything that happens in the outer realm is an opportunity for me to either choose love or fear? And from that framework, then we can see that everything that's happening can be an opportunity for us to awaken and to assist others in that awakening process as well.
Yeah, I look at the world and it staggers me whenever I bother to think about it, that there was an intelligence that is so great that it could have created this universe. It absolutely blows me away. And when I think about it, I think that any intelligence that is so incredible that it could create this universe and me and everything within it would hardly allow the world to get out of control. And I kind of look at it as this us versus them. It seems to be a concept that we see played out all over the world, and in some much more, in our own lives we see it, but then, you read the paper and it's big time other places, and prejudice is everywhere. And it seems to me that what we're being taught is to deal with prejudice. And you can see there's nowhere in the world that it doesn't exist at some level or another. It's all within us. And I just see a bigger spiritual message in it. What are your thoughts on that?
Without a doubt. Thank you for saying that. I think that the word prejudice is a great word, because at the root of that is this idea of us and them, right? There's something, there's something that happens within us. I think on an animalistic level, there's a part of us that wants to find like people, right? And that comes probably from a very cellular level of times that we actually, our lives were much more threatened. We walk outside of the cave and we might be eaten. So tribes or people that are like us created safety. The issue with that, of course, as we know, is that is, all ego, that's all fear. And what we're moving into in a profound way in consciousness is a recognition of our oneness. And from that, we get to examine our own prejudices, right? Because if we're all, this is part of not being good, but getting real. If we're all going to be honest and authentic, we recognize, because we've lived in this world and we've been taught all of these things, whether consciously or unconsciously, we've been taught very, very clearly there's an enemy somewhere and that there's something that we need to protect. So, of course, there's a perceived other. And when there's a perceived other, we can get this feeling of superiority, which, of course, is what we talked about as part of the unawakened state. And so from that, of course, we have all types of prejudice. Part of waking up to our true nature is unlearning, right? It's unlearning and dismantling all these ideas that we have about ourselves and the world. Part of that is our prejudices and our perspectives. Anytime I'm viewing someone as the other, that's a prejudice, right? In whatever way it is. Examining that, recognizing that we all have that, and then tapping into something deeper and truer is the awakening process. So we get to recognize that all of us have that. And so many of us are just trying to rearrange those in the outer realm. Of course, what we're talking about is something much different.
Yeah. What I liked is your 100th monkey concept. And we don't have time to go into it a lot, but basically what that says is that if a few small groups can start becoming awakened, if you will, start seeing the world different, it can spread like osmosis to a larger collective consciousness. I thought that was really good with what you said.
Yeah, thank you. And we know that's this web of life that we call consciousness. And when each of us does our own inner work and our own shifting, it impacts what's happening on the planet without a doubt.
And that's goes back to we're all connected.
Yes.
I also liked what you said, that we should not be waiting for a new Messiah. Instead, we should be slowly changing ourselves into one. Great concept.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that goes back to those levels of consciousness, because when we're operating at the martyr level of consciousness, the reason I call it martyrs, we're looking for something outside of us. If this Messiah will just come. And I think in the 21st century, we're shifting in a really dramatic way into a recognition that this is for each of us to do our own work, our own inner work, so that we can wake up rather than waiting for something outside of us to bring that.
Exactly. TJ, we've run out of time. Can you tell people a little bit about you know, how they can get in touch with you and find out what you're doing these days.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. TJWoodward.com is the best place to look me up and see the work that I'm doing. I am an awakening coach. I work with people all around the world, assisting people in this process of awakening to their true nature. Also have a spiritual community here in San Francisco called Awakened Living. And you can, you know, look at my talks and interviews all on my YouTube channel. But the best place to find me is TJWoodward.com. You can find everything there.
TJ, thanks so much for being on the show. It's been great fun talking to you.
Thank you, Dave. What an honor.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from today's chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you could possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.